Welcome to the Songs and Stories of Canada. This program is called Logging in the West.
On the floor. He got laid off a few days later, but the food, it gets better right away.
Hey, Kootenay, who's this old logger you're taking us to see?
His name's Nels Hansen. He's the guy who taught me logging way back when. He was logging here on the coast before the First World War. So if you want to find out about it, he's the guy to see. Well, he's been retired for quite a while now. He lives down at the Swedish-Canadian rest home. He's got a lot of friends there.
So he taught you all about logging when you first started out, eh?
Yes, although the first day when I met him, I didn't figure he could teach me anything. I got off the boat, and the boss says, "That's Nels over there. You go work with him." Well, I looked over, and I saw this old guy sitting on a stump chewing tobacco. He was about 150 years old. I couldn't see him as a logger at all. I was 6'1", about 200 pounds. I'd been playing football at the school, and I thought it was pretty tough. The first thing Nels and I had to do was to take a block and cable up the mountain. I had the block, and Nels had the cable. Well, let me tell you, I was tripping and scrambling all the way up that mountain. Well, Nels, boy, he was just like a mountain goat. He was miles ahead of me. When I finally got to the top, I was ready to pass out, but Nels, he wanted to take a hike back down again for another load. I spent a year hauling cables up and down that mountain. I was learning how to be a chokerman. The chokerman hooks the logs up to the cable, and then the whistle blows and the donkey engine drags the logs down the hill. Let me tell you, the first month, my hands got cut to shreds just trying to get those chokers around those logs. And when those cables started to move, watch out.
One day I thought I'd have some fun and see how hooking chokers was done. Since Duncan Logging had begun, I tackled the boss that night. He says, "My chokerman's bit the dust, his head is bashed in and his legs are bust, and though with luck he'll live, I trust, of chokers he hates the sight." We hit the river the very next week. That Duncan country looked awfully bleak. Of that I will not even speak. It's just a great big bog. The mosquitoes are huge, and so are the fleas. We only have rotten cedar for trees, and every step it's mud to the knees, and that's where I learned how to log. They hauled me from bed at about midnight. Breakfast was only a sniff and a bite, and then began a terrible fight, a knockdown and drag out deal. I picked up a choker, 'twas 16 feet long. It tangled my legs and it gave me a bong. The boss only said, "You're doing it wrong, but someday you'll get the feel." I sure got the feel, and soon enough too, my gloves were torn off, my fingers chewed through, my shins were all bruises, and all that I knew was how to buckle my belt. The logs were a mystery, how they could stay. Well, I worked on the same one for most of the day. When the boss came along, not one word could he say, as he tore off his hat in a rage. Thank you. I've worked in the cities, I've worked in the mines, I've sat in jails a couple of times. If again I hooked chokers, I've made up my mind to put one right around my head. For setting chokers, you get no relief. You only have bruises and all kinds of grief. So here is my thesis, and you'll find it brief. I think I would rather be dead.
Nels, I'd like you to meet a couple of friends of mine. John, Rika.
Hello.
They want to hear what it was like logging on the West Coast back in the old days.
Hi, Nels. Kootenay was telling us you used to be a lumberjack.
Ha! Lumberjack? No way. I was a logger.
That word, a lumberjack, is an Eastern word. No one ever uses it out in the West. Out here, we're called loggers.
You must have started logging before they used machines.
Yeah. I first started as a hand logger. All we needed was a good two-headed axe, a two-man saw, some wedges, and some jacks. That's all it took. And then we head up the coast for a nice, sheltered little bay and a stand of good pitchbacks.
Pitchbacks? What kind of a tree is that?
That's what we call a Douglas fir. You see, the bottom of the tree collects all this pitch, and that's pretty hard stuff to chop through. So I take out my springboard, chop a notch in the tree, about 5, maybe 6 feet up, and put in the boards so I could stand up there and chop above the pitch. What a beautiful spring morning. No one around but the eagles. Ah, wonderful smells of sawdust in the forest. What a life.
Loggers, and hear me sing me song, for it is very short and it will not take you long. We had blankets for the travel and biscuits for the chore. We were in search of pitchbacks way up the Euclid-tall. We're leaving Vancouver with sorrow, grief and woe, and heading up the country about 100 miles or so. We had blankets for the travel and biscuits for the chore. We were in search of pitchbacks way up the Euclid-tall. We hired 14 loggers and we hired a man to saw. We hired a greenhorn cook and he ran the hotcakes raw. We had blankets for the travel and biscuits for the chore. We were in search of pitchbacks way up the Euclid-tall. We had blankets for the travel and biscuits for the chore. We were in search of pitchbacks way up the Euclid-tall.
The first logging camp I worked in was way up the coast, and the only way in or out was the boat. The Cassia, she was called. A real logger special. Every time she called at camp, there was loggers and food coming in and loggers going back out. Hey, Nels, you remember that first trip back down to Vancouver?
What? When you got robbed? Oh, sure. Both of us with big wad of money and a big appetite. I tried to tell you to watch out for yourself, but you have to learn the hard way.
The hard way is right. That first night, I went off by myself to get a good feed at a restaurant. Well, I paid my bill, and then I stuffed my money back in my pocket and walked out the door. I took a shortcut down the alley. That was my big mistake. Halfway down, I heard a noise behind me.
Oh!
And that's the last thing I remember. When I came to, my head was throbbing and my 4 months' pay was all gone. Some guy had knocked me out with a club and robbed me.
Mm-hmm. I told you should have stuck with me. The first place I went was to see Tommy Roberts, who ran the Grand Hotel down on Water Street. Now, he was a good friend of the loggers.
Yeah, he used to put your money in the hotel safe for you, so he wouldn't get robbed.
Yeah, that was quite a place, that Grand Hotel.
There's a place in Vancouver the loggers know well. It's a place where they keep Rutgard whiskey to sell. They also keep boarders, and they keep them like hell. And the name of that place is the Grand Hotel. Oh, the Grand Hotel, when the loggers come in, it's amusing to see the proprietor grin. For he knows they've got cash and he'll soon have it all. So come on, boys, have a drink, you will hear Tommy call. Oh, the bartenders laugh as the money rolls in. They drink beer and whiskey, champagne, rum and gin, till they all get so boozy they can drink no more. And the loggers lay scattered all over the floor. In the morning the loggers wake up from their bed. Their money is gone and oh Lord, what a head. They rush to the bar and they call for a drink. And Tommy gets busy a-slinging the ink. That's 4 bits for your bed, though you slept on the floor. And the breakfast you've missed will be 4 bits more. And a $4 meal ticket good at the bar. And a pass back to camp on the old Cassiar. There's a place in Vancouver the loggers know well. It's a place where they keep Rutgard whiskey to sell. They also keep boarders and they keep them like hell. And the name of that place is the Grand Hotel.
After 4 months in the woods, I was really looking forward to taking off my big boots. The first thing I did when I got into town was to buy myself a pair of fancy shoes. And boy, were they thin. For a while there, it felt like I was walking around in my socks. If I stood on a quarter, I could have told you if it was heads or tails.
Yeah, sure was nice to get back to town and get a sample of that good food. In camp, you see, we had just one cook, and if he was a good cook or if he was a lousy cook, it was all the same. You had to eat it, what he gave you.
Unless you wanted to eat branches.
One cook we had was no cook at all. He saw a sign in the logging agency in town that said cook wanted, and he needed a job and was ready to try anything. Let me tell you, it was greasy stew for 3 weeks. That man used so much grease in the kitchen that he had to wear spike boots to keep from sliding right out of the door.
Waiters to see as they pass many times to and fro, with a dish in each hand, about all they can man, at Bucks Camp down at Monroe. Oh, the Loki does fine as she makes the incline, makes it both puff, snort and blow. It would unman your nerves as she slides round the curves at Bucks Camp down at Monroe. McCormick is our foreman, he's lazy as he's big. He rolled a log the other day and killed our only pig. It's amusing to me, those waiters to see, as they pass many times to and fro, with a dish in each hand, about all they can man, at Bucks Camp down at Monroe. Yes, at Bucks Camp down at Monroe.
Me and Nels worked together for a couple of years, and then I wanted to get a job in town so I could be close to my girlfriend. But the only kind of work I could find was down at the sawmill.
You never told me too much about that. What kind of place was it?
Yeah, it was huge. Great stacks of lumber everywhere. And in the middle was the mill, grinding and churning. What a racket! The noise nearly drove me crazy, especially after being out in the woods. They put me on the green chain. I worked every day, yanking lumber off the big conveyor belt. I had a thick pair of gloves on, but I still got splinters in my hand pulling off those planks. It was pretty back-breaking work, too, because the muscles you use in the woods are not the muscles you need on a green chain. There's lots of nights I'd get off shift, go home, and just collapse on my bed and sleep without even taking my clothes off. I was so tired. And there's no time to rest at work, because that green chain's going 24 hours a day. When I started, I kept missing lumber. And the foreman would stop the belt and bawl me out. He told me I had garbage for brains. If it wasn't for the rest of the crew helping me out, I would have gone crazy.
You who live a life of leisure, you who live a life of ease, in your mansions in the country or your yacht upon the seas, does your conscience ever picture on the tablet of your brain the sad thought of men in misery pulling lumber off the chain? When the pond is full of timber, the jack-ladder's running wild, and the sawyer in his carriage has the bandsaw set and filed, from the head rig to the trim saw, through the planer moves the train of that endless pile of lumber out upon that long green chain. When the shift boss hits that button, then you'd better look alive, 'cause the lumber comes a-rollin' like the bees out of a hive. And you'll feel that sweat come pouring as each muscle screams with pain, and you'll wonder if it's worth it working on the long green chain. When I go to meet my maker, there is just one hope I hold, that St. Peter at the Golden Gate won't leave me in the cold. But if he sends me down below, this truth to you I'll tell, well, I still won't be unhappy, 'cause that green chain's worse than hell.
You ever heard of Paul Bunyan?
Isn't he that huge logger with the big blue ox name of Babe?
That's right. Well, I got proof that Paul Bunyan existed.
Oh, come on.
Well, you know when you grow something. If you fertilize it, it grows bigger.
Right.
Well, the best fertilizer there is manure. Now, you take a huge ox like old Babe, an animal that size will produce a lot of manure.
That's for sure.
And if you had a tree grown out of Babe's barn, it would be a pretty huge tree. Well, we found that particular tree one day. Biggest tree I ever saw in my life. And we started to chop. 3 days we chopped and chopped and chopped. 3 days from dawn till dark. 3 nights we chopped and never stopped, but didn't get down through the bark. Now there was a tree, believe you me. What made it so big was a mystery. So we stopped for a talk and we took a walk while we pondered over its history. We trekked in and out and around about the columns that rose from its base, till we seemed to sense, with a feeling tense, that we trod in a holy place. That our lives we dreamed, until now it seemed we were insects, merely creeping. Then I heard a shout, and I turned about, and I knew that I hadn't been sleeping. 'Twas another crew, and the great chips flew from the trunk of that very same tree, from whence we had tried, on the opposite side, to unravel its mystery. But it was no use. They'd ran out of snooze, and the tree was too darn big. So they joined our force as their only course, and the bunch of us started to dig. Now we didn't say quid till we dug a pit at its base in search of a clue, in hopes we'd discover and maybe uncover the proof that my hunch had been true. Then an oxen's yoke, all splintered and broke, was unearthed from the depth down there.
and Babe was inscribed on its petrified side, and I noticed a monstrous blue hair. There were harness rings, big, ponderous things, and a diary carved in the rocks that told us the story, the power and the glory of Paul and his big blue ox. So we buried them there with reverent care to preserve them from civilization. And to finish my yarn, it was the sight of Babe's barn and the acme of fertilization.
So that tree had grown out of old Babe's barn, eh?
That's right.
Yeah, that Paul Bunyan was a pretty big guy.
Well, we know a song about a guy who could have been Paul Bunyan.
No, he couldn't have been Paul Bunyan. He was too small. He was just a little guy, all about 9'6". And he couldn't have weighed much more than 300 or 400 pounds.
As I sat down one evening, 'twas in a small cafe, a 40-year-old waitress to me these words did say.
I see you are a logger, and not just a common bum, for nobody but a logger stirs his coffee with his thumb. My lover was a logger, there's none like him today. If you poured whiskey on it, he would eat a bale of hay.
He never shaved the whiskers from off of his horny hide. He just drove them in with a hammer and he chewed them off inside.
My lover came to see me, 'twas on a winter's day. He held me in a fond embrace, which broke 3 vertebrae. He kissed me when we parted, so hard that he broke my jaw. I could not speak to tell him he forgot his mackinaw. And so I saw my lover walking through the snow, sauntering gaily homeward at 41 below.
The weather tried to freeze him, it did its level best. At 100 degrees below zero, he just buttoned up his vest. It froze clear through to China, it froze to the stars above. At 1,000 degrees below zero,
it froze my logger love. We tried in vain to thaw him, and would you believe it, sir? They made him into axe blades to chop the Douglas fir. And so I lost my lover, and to this cafe I come, and here I wait till someone stirs his coffee with his thumb.
Well, we better go now. I gotta catch a plane early tomorrow morning.
Where are you headed?
Up to Port Hardy. I signed on as a faller for an outfit up there.
Faller, eh? That's a few steps up from when you were a chokerman.
You better believe it. And the food's a lot better than it was back then, too.
No more greasy stew, eh?
No, sir. Good food. Clean bunks and hot showers.
That's just like what I got down here. You sure that's a logging camp up there and not a rest home?
Very funny. Well, Nels, take care of yourself, and I'll drop in again when I'm back in town.
So long, Kootenay.
Bye, Nels.
See you again.
Logging in the West was written and produced in Vancouver by John Bartlett, Gary Marcuse, and Rika Rubsat. The actors were Jürgen Bierwald and Klaus Werner. The musicians were Keith Malcolm, Paul Newman, Bob Webb, and Fred Weiss. Lead singing by John Bartlett and Rika Rubsat. Technical production by Hal Beckett and Intmoot Studios. With a special thanks to Tom Sullivan and to Robert E. Swanson for his logging sound effects and the poem Paul Bunyan's Archives. And thanks for listening.